VOA News reporting by remote, I'm Michael Brown. U.S. military officials said crews were still searching Wednesday for five missing sailors a day after a U.S. Navy helicopter crashed in the ocean off Southern California near an aircraft carrier. One sailor rescued shortly after the crash of the helicopter Tuesday afternoon and was listed in stable condition at a hospital in San Diego, according to a statement released by the Navy Pacific Fleet. Also injured, five other sailors who were on board the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier where the helicopter was operating on the deck before the crash. The statement did not say how the crash off San Diego happened, but the fact that sailors aboard the carrier were injured raised questions about whether the helicopter or parts of it hit the aircraft carrier. When the helicopters take off and land on the ship, there are ground crews present on the carrier nearby and other people working on deck. The crash happened while the helicopter was conducting what the Navy described as routine flight operations. Nigerian gunmen kidnapped 73 students after storming a high school in the northwestern section of the country in the latest in a series of mass abductions targeting students. Kidnappings for ransom by armed gangs known locally as bandits has become a grim trend in northwest and central Nigeria, with around 1,000 students snatched this year, most of them later released. Police spokesman said rescue teams are working with the military to try to release the students. President Muhammadu Buhari is under pressure over insecurity, and the armed forces have launched military raids and airstrikes on bandit camps, but gunmen have kept up attacks and abductions. For more news, voanews.com. Via remote, this is VOA News. The U.S. National Hurricane Center reports the weather system, formerly known as Hurricane Ida, which caused all that devastation across the southeastern area of the state of Louisiana, now classified as a post-tropical cyclone moving through the mid-Atlantic region here in the U.S. on the East Coast, causing flash flooding and spawning tornadoes in its path. Ahead of the system, tornadoes reported in the state of Maryland to the north and east of the capital, Washington, D.C. The Hurricane Center said the system could even gain strength when it moves offshore later Thursday. Fire crews reported progress Wednesday in an effort to save neighborhoods from a massive forest fire near the tourist resort of Lake Tahoe in the western state of Nevada. A fire official said the winds, which have been pushing the fire, did not strengthen as much as expected early Wednesday. Fire reached the southern tip of Lake Tahoe Wednesday after evacuation orders in the neighboring state of California were expanded to Nevada, forcing crews to scramble to prevent it from reaching the resort city of South Lake Tahoe. Heavy smoke from what is called the Caldor Fire has blanketed the resort city, leaving it largely empty during what is normally a bustling tourist season. Caldor Fire has destroyed more than 600 structures and now threatens at least 33,000 others. U.S. President Joe Biden Wednesday criticizing a Texas law that bans most abortions in the state hours after the Supreme Court declined to act on an emergency request by the abortion rights groups to block the measure from taking effect. Texas is among a dozen mostly Republican-led states that have enacted heartbeat abortion bans, which outlawed the procedure once the rhythmic contracting of fetal cardiac tissue can be detected, often at 6 weeks, and sometimes before a woman realizes she is pregnant. The Texas anti-abortion law is unusual in that it gives private citizens the power to the Supreme Court, even with a 63 conservative majority, could still stop the Texas law. High Court has agreed to hear arguments in its upcoming term starting in October about a Mississippi law that bans most abortions after 15 weeks, significantly before fetal viability. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown reporting by remote, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, the second day of September, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe teachers will not go back to their classrooms until their concerns are addressed.
There is negligence on the part of the responsible authority to make sure that there is enough safety to guarantee our learners and our teachers from the pandemic. It's a disaster. We are sitting on a time bomb in terms of the health of both the learners and teachers.
Gambia's health ministry threatens disciplinary action against striking nurses. Liberia's immediate former vice president says he's healthy enough to seek the presidency in 2023. Unemployment hits black women in South Africa the hardest. And Tanzania's opposition Chadema says charges against its leader are politically motivated.
It is true that we are going through a very difficult times, but at the end of the day, I'm sure we shall overcome this. And Mr. Mbowe will be set free because they have no legal grounds to convict him.
And the International Labour Organization says more than 4 billion people globally have no social protection. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe resumed in-classroom teaching this week, but thousands of teachers are protesting a lack of personal protective equipment and say they will not go back to class until the government addresses their concerns over the coronavirus pandemic. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe's Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union says it will only call off their strike when the government addresses their concerns. These include salaries that are below the poverty level and the lack of personal protective equipment against COVID-19. Here is Robson Cherem, Secretary General of Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe.
And there's negligence on the part of the responsible authority to make sure that there's enough safety to guarantee our learners and our teachers from the pandemic. They should have been providing water, adequate water supply, enough PPEs. Arcturus Primary School, which is down here, doesn't even have water. And it's a mess. It's a disaster. There's a danger. We are sitting on a time bomb in terms of the health of both the learners and teachers.
Authorities did not allow VOA into Arcturus Primary School, which is about 40 kilometers east of Harare. Some students around Harare have been going to school since Monday to try to learn among themselves as there are no teachers. The teachers' union warns that classrooms may turn into super spreaders of COVID-19. But Taunga Nandoro, Director of Communications and Advocacy at Zimbabwe's Ministry of Education, says the government has been working to ensure classrooms are safe.
We have been putting in place new infrastructure to ensure that we decongest the existing infrastructure to ensure that there is a social and physical distancing for the prevention and management of COVID-19. We have also made sure that our schools have got adequate supplies of sanitizers and water. So it is looking good. We've got desks, single-seater desks. Now, instead of three-seater desks or two-seater desks, this is to encourage social distancing. So we don't have any bunk beds anymore in our boarding schools. We've got single beds and the spacing of at least 1.5 to 2 meters. So it's encouraging. It's encouraging.
UNICEF Zimbabwe has been helping students and the government during the COVID-19 lockdown. Nick Abrishiamen is UNICEF Zimbabwe's education manager.
The two key approach were, one, looking at how we can support the loss of learning as a result of the school closure. The second one was looking at how to keep the schools safe and ready and prepared for children to return and go back to school. We managed to produce first more than 1,600 radio lessons as part of alternative learning approaches. We had to look at how we can take learning to the children, especially when they were at home and did not have access to schooling.
Zimbabwe's teachers hope such organizations can assist the government and supply the resources they require, adequate PPEs against COVID-19 and salaries that allow them to live above the poverty line. Zimbabwe currently has 124,773 confirmed coronavirus infections and 4,419 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University, which is tracking the global outbreak. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
In the Gambia, nurses have embarked on a sit-down strike. They are demanding what they call unpaid allowances. As Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, Gambia's health ministry is threatening to institute disciplinary action against the striking nurses if they fail to report to work.
The strike action followed failed negotiations between the Ministry of Health and the Gambian Nurses Association. Usman Toure is the Secretary General of Gambia's Nurses Association.
What's going on is that nurses embark on a strike based on the agreement that was brokered in May 2021 for certain allowances to be in August, but it was rather unfortunate that the agreement was not met on time, so that was what led to the sit-down strike.
The health ministry on Wednesday issued a statement warning the striking nurses by asking them to resume work or else, according to the ministry, disciplinary actions would be taken against them. The nurses are calling on the government to fulfill what they call an earlier agreement that they reached on the issue of better working incentives.
And the agreement was to enhance, upgrade some few allowances, two allowances, and then a new allowance was also reinstated. So this was the agreement, and then it was not fulfilled on time, so that led to the strike. Although payment has started, but it has not covered the number of nurses, that one can say up to 50% of the nurses.
The Gambian government recently increased salaries for doctors, PhD holders, and the health minister. Though the nurses weren't happy with the government's move to sideline them, they have accused the ministry of discrimination, a charge the ministry denied. Meanwhile, the Secretary General and head of the civil service has decided to move in as a mediator.
The situation is that nurses have lost confidence in the ministry, so that is why we could not even table matters out with them any longer. So that's why we have been invited to the office of the president.
When asked by VOA as to whether they would call off the strike action, Toure had this to say.
I cannot give you 100% assurance because, as I said, I am one out of the executive members, one out of the 2,800 or 3,000 nurses in the Gambia. So sitting here with you today and telling you that we are going back to work tomorrow could be spoken out of context. So when we arrive at that and we get sufficient information and reliable one and a consensus that we can share with the media houses, it will definitely not be a problem to tell you, Pandere, we are resuming work tomorrow.
Mamadou Ndiaye is the Director of Health Promotion at the Ministry of Health. He stressed the need for dialogue to resolve the issue.
In the event that they fail to solve tomorrow, we still continue our dialogue because I think at this point in time, the ministry is opening its doors to negotiate and to dialogue with them, and that will continue. And then until some time, we see them working. So definitely, we want to still go into dialogue with them.
The health ministry says some of the nurses have already been paid and efforts are being made to pay the remaining nurses. The strike action came at a time when the country is witnessing a surge in COVID-19 infection cases. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandere by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
South Africa's jobless rate has hit 34%, among the highest in the world, as the country's economy is stifled by the coronavirus pandemic. Black women are among the worst affected, with 44% unemployed. Linda Gevetage reports from Johannesburg.
Rebecca Mwale has been sitting in her Johannesburg apartment searching for jobs to no avail since January. The recent graduate from a supply chain management program was already working in the sector when the pandemic struck, and she found herself laid off.
I apply almost every day, but the responses I'm getting, I'm sure I've applied more than 30 times since, but I've only gotten like two responses back. There's not much out here. I even actually started applying outside the country.
About 558,000 South Africans lost their jobs last quarter, a period marked by strict COVID-19 lockdowns. The government says the number of job seekers has reached 7.8 million, while an additional 3.3 million people have given up searching. While the pandemic is taking an economic toll, economists like Efficient Group's Davi Root says it's compounded with a historically bleak situation.
I don't think it's turned a corner. I think unemployment is likely to continue creeping up. And unfortunately, it's women that will be the brunt of all this.
2 decades of experience as a flight attendant for South Africa's national carrier didn't spare Charity Mokomane from job cuts last year. She never dreamed of retraining, but she says she didn't want to leave her husband as the family's sole breadwinner.
When you keep hearing places are shedding jobs, shedding jobs, shedding jobs, then you think, oh, you know, I can't. I just decided to maybe try and look at other avenues of making money.
She adopted her mother's passion for baking and started selling cakes from her home. Economists say this type of informal entrepreneurship isn't captured in employment data. It means people like Mokomane are still getting by.
And I feel also slightly more in control of what happens to my life. And whatever happens, people have to eat.
But for young job seekers like Mwale, the disruption has curtailed dreams of building a career. The stress has also taken a toll on her mental health.
I did not envision myself depressed and sitting at home. It was not in my plans. I did not even imagine.
South Africa's economy did grow in the first quarter of this year, but economists warn unemployment will remain high for the foreseeable future. Faced with uncertainty, Mwale says all she can often do is pray. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, the second day of September. And let's send a shout out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate station, Radio Banga FM 96.5 in Bong County, Central Liberia, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. The International Labour Organization says more than 4 billion people globally have no social protection at a time when the COVID-19 pandemic is wreaking havoc upon their lives and livelihoods. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The ILO's World Social Protection Report 2020-2022 reveals the extent to which COVID-19 has devastated the world of work. It exposes the inequality between the rich countries that are beginning to rebound from the economic distress of the pandemic and the developing countries that remain deeply mired in poverty. Additionally, the report finds less than half the world's population, or 47%, is covered by at least one social protection benefit, while 4.1 billion people, or 53%, have no income security at all. The report highlights some of the significant regional inequalities in social protection. For example, ILO Director General Guy Ryder notes in Europe and Central Asia, 84% of the population has at least one social protection benefit. This compared to Africa, where just 17.4% of the population has coverage.
The vast majority of children globally, 73.6%, receive no social protection benefits. Only 44.9% of pregnant and childbearing women receive a cash maternity benefit. Just 39% of the working age population is legally entitled to sickness benefits. Think what that means in pandemic conditions.
While most retired workers receive an old age pension, the report finds their benefits often are not enough to make ends meet. Ryder says gaps in social protection, such as the lack of sickness and employment benefits, can undermine other essential policy priorities, such as those surrounding public health.
Just that the crisis has confirmed the urgent need for a basic level of social security for all, what we call a social protection floor. We must do more to ensure that everyone has a legally guaranteed access to adequate social protection throughout their life cycle.
The report outlines several priority actions to achieve this. It calls for national social security policies to be reinforced and for adequate social protections to be extended to workers in all types of employment. The ILO says gaps in social protection must be closed, especially for women, for people in the informal economy, and for migrant workers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A spokesperson for Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party, says while it is true that the opposition is currently going through a very difficult time with the imprisonment of its leaders, in the end, the opposition will prevail and their leader, Frema Omboy, will be set free. John Mrema, Chadema's Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols, says the government has no legal justification to detain Mr. Omboy because the charges against him are fabricated and political. Mboy and other party leaders were arrested last month and charged with terrorism. His lawyers argued this week that the High Court's Economic Sabotage Division did not have jurisdiction to hear the case. A judge ruled on Wednesday that the court had authority to hear the terrorism case. Mrema says while Mboy has not been tortured in prison, the other three defendants have said they were tortured in prison.
I have visited him personally in the prison, and I have been visiting him since Monday, yesterday, and today. I was in the court personally, and I've seen him, I've talked to him.
How true are the reports quoting the opposition that Mr. Omboy is being tortured to force him to make statements?
The issue that Mr. Omboy was tortured, I think you get it not right. But the issue is the other accused three were the ones who were tortured severely and forced to give out statements. And they did say that in front of the court of the law, that what the police brought in front of the court, it is because they were tortured severely, and that is not what they said to the police. And they were forced to sign something they were not even allowed to read. So that has been brought in court from day one. So Mr. Mboe has not been tortured, but the other accused three who were arrested last year on August last year, they are the ones who claim in the court that they were tortured by the police, and then the police forced them to sign documents they were never even allowed to read.
What's next now, Mr. Mrema, for the opposition, or what's happening for the opposition?
What next for the opposition in Tanzania? It is true that we are going through a very difficult times, but at the end of the day, I'm sure we shall overcome this. And Mr. Mboe will be set free because they have no legal grounds at all to convict him. That we are sure of it. The only thing they can do is to detain him for more time, for longer, until his case ended. But we are sure that at the end of the day, Mr. Mboe will be acquitted because these are fabricated charges, trumped up charges against him. And it is purely political matter which have been brought to the court in the name of terrorism. You can't understand that someone like Mr. Mboe, a businessman, a leader of the opposition, member of parliament for the last 20 years, he's now charged by financing terrorism for only $260. That is the charge in the court, that conspiracy and financing terrorism by using $260. I'm not saying 200,000, 260. This is the charge that he conspired in the Financing Terrorism Act. That is the charge before the court. Something which I'm sure even their witnesses, they won't be able to defend it. Even their lawyers won't be able to defend it. That's why we are confident that Mr. Mboe will be acquitted. What next for the opposition? We are moving on, building the opposition, and we are happy that other opposition leaders have joined us in the court. They have given us their lawyers. So the parties like NCCR Mageuzi, they have given us one lawyer. ACT Wazalendo, they have given us lawyers. And themselves, they were present in the court yesterday and today, showing solidarity. So we are building up a strong opposition now of the coalition of the willing because of what is going on. Even the CUF, the Civic United Front, they've been issuing several statements to the government, to the President Samia, that she should let Mboe free. So for this moment, we are confident that we are moving on and we'll be building a more strong coalition of the willing.
John Mrema is the Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols for Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. The former vice president of Liberia, Joseph Boakai, says he is seeking the nomination of the opposition collaborating political parties, the CPP, in Liberia's 2023 presidential election because the people want him to run. Boakai served for 12 years as vice president to then-President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and was also the standard bearer in the 2017 presidential election for the Unity Party, which is currently part of the collaborating political parties. The 77-year-old Boakai says he is healthy enough to take on the challenges of the presidency.
I have no choice. I have to. The people want me to run, and they are the ones who support me running, so I obey them.
In that light, Mr. Vice President, so let me ask you, because I have been hearing and reading about a leadership problem or predicament within the opposition collaborating political parties. Is there a leadership crisis in the CPP?
It is a seeming crisis. It shouldn't be, because we do have a document that we agreed upon to bind us. In that document, it's well spelled out as to how we go about it. But, you know, the documents are what they are, and people outside may not know all that is in there, so their interpretation, but I believe each of us who signed the document is aware of what's in the document, and we are proceeding with it. So we believe at the end of the day, that document will decide which way to go.
When you say signing document, meaning how to go about choosing the standard bearer of the CPP?
Yes, when it comes to that, surely I'll decide that how the whole CPP should work. So we do have a framework document that laid out correctly how we should proceed with nomination or how we go on deciding who should have the ticket.
So assuming you do not win the nomination, Mr. Vice President, would you support whoever wins?
The law enshrined as to how we proceed with that. And, you know, I tell you, Martin, there's an agreement, and in an agreement, you follow all the rules to the letter, the outcome shouldn't be predicted. Everybody should know it. So we have first consensus, and we can't get a consensus, we go out to a VPS, which is the voter's perception. Then from there, the voter's perception will advise those who are going to make the decision as to the way forward. If we abide with all of what it's written in there, we shouldn't have problem to decide the outcome.
Mr. Vice President, how are you, or how is your health?
Very, very good. You hearing me? And I said I was very well, and I took my vaccination, and said I'm very, very well.
You see, I'm asking that question because some Liberians say that you are an old man and may not be well enough to take on the challenges of the presidency.
Well, that's their saying, and I know the state of my health. I'm not complaining. I haven't been in hospital for the last, 2 years or so. So I'm good as I can be to be able to assume any responsibility, and I'm discharging my responsibility on a daily basis, go to my farm, come to my office. I haven't been complaining. Age is what it is. I mean, I can't assume that. And I thank God that I am as old as I am, and I will be even much older, but I'm as healthy as can be.
Would you be willing to make your health records public?
To whom?
In case it's required during the process of choosing the leader.
If it's a part of our requirement, then I should abide with it. But I don't think it is part of our requirement to do so. And my doctors know the state of my health, and they can decide, they can, we feel it, that it is necessary. But I can tell you, I'm healthy, and I feel very strong to do what I'm supposed to do.
Mr. Vice President, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, James.
That was Liberia's former Vice President, Joseph Boakai, who was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. And that's it for this Thursday, September 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you well. Have a very good day.